ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
टेक्स्ट नंबर 34।
मन्मनाभवमद्भक्तो
मद्याजी मां नमस्कुरु
मामे वैश्यसि युक्त्वैवम्
आत्मानं मत्परायणः। Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So in the previous verse, Krishna said, Bhajasvamam. That's how he concluded the previous verse, isn't it? Anityam masukam dokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. So bhajasvamam means engage in my loving devotion service. And how to do that? That he explains in this text, 34. So today we are reading one of the most important verses of Bhagavad Gita, as it is. In fact, this verse is the essence of the essence of the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Amongst the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the middle 6 chapters are considered to be the most important, like the cream. Like in a book, you have a cover in the front and the back. In the middle, you have the actual content of the book. So the middle 6 chapters are like that. So they are covered by karma and jnana. The middle 6 chapters are on bhakti. Amongst the middle 6 chapters, in the 9th, and the 10th chapters, they are also considered very important, 9 and 10. And this verse is in the middle of 9 and 10. It's like the jam in the middle of a bread, the most tastiest part of the bread. And here Krishna gives the most sublime instruction to Arjuna, a direct instruction. What should Arjuna do? How should Arjuna worship him? You see, the Vedas are like a very vast ocean. And there are many prescriptions given for different people at different times, in different circumstances, according to their different qualifications. That is why amongst the scholars of Sanatana Dharma or Hinduism, sometimes you find there are so many debates going on, controversies. So what is the real religious principle? What is real religion? Is often very obscure. It is covered over by, actual religion is covered over by many sub-religious principles. Like worshipping one's guest is considered a religion. Worshipping one's mother and father, the elders, is also religion. Worshipping the devatas is also religion. And helping the poor, helping the blind and the needy, is also considered dharma. And even performing yajna, fire sacrifices, giving charity, dan, performing penances, austerities, is also considered dharma. In this way, dharma has various facets. Telling the truth is also dharma. So what dharma should every individual follow? What dharma should I follow? You may have a question in mind. In Bhagavad Gita, often people consider one famous verse to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse? Of course, that people say. But what do we call as essence generally? Sarva dharmān parityajya. So in that verse, Krishna says that he expects a total surrender from his devotee. Sarva dharmān parityajya māṁ ekam śaraṇam vraja. In which he says, all other religious principles that are mentioned in the scriptures, they all become subordinate to this one principle of surrendering to Krishna. And such a devotee who surrenders to Krishna, whatever is favorable for that surrender, he will accept it. Whatever is unfavorable, he will reject it. And he will always depend on Krishna. He will never think he is independent of Krishna. He will always understand that he is maintained by Krishna at every moment. And he will have complete faith that Krishna is my only master and I have no other master. Such a person will not take shelter of any of the demigods, no matter how powerful they be. They be Shiva or Brahma or Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, or even some so-called god, manufactured god amongst humans, who is giving gold and silver, who is giving benedictions, material benedictions. So one will not take shelter of anybody else. One will take shelter of only Krishna. And one will not, even while going to Krishna, one will not expect anything from Krishna. Such a person who is surrendered to Krishna will not ask Krishna for any material benefits, nor will he speculate about Krishna, but he surrenders to Krishna, understanding him to be the ultimate goal of life, understanding Krishna to be the ultimate lover. So this is Sarva Dharmān Parityajya. So Krishna is demanding such a surrender, a selfless surrender out of pure love. That's what Krishna is demanding. And the components of that surrender are explained in the next, in the previous verse, 18.65. 66 is Sarva Dharmān Parityajya. And the components of the surrender is Manmana, Madbhakto, Madhyaji, Manmaskuru. So here Krishna says the same, almost verbatim, same words. And he is repeating it in the 18th chapter again to reinforce his instruction. So he has kept it in the middle of the book and he is also telling the same thing at the end of the book in order to reconfirm. This is one of the techniques that people use while talking on phone. Like sometimes you tell a person, so can you do this for me? The other person says, yes, I will do it for you. And then you then start talking about various things. So how was that, how was this? And probably you will talk for another 10-12 minutes or so. And then while concluding, so again, I believe you remember what I told you in the beginning. You know, I told you to do this. If you remember what I told you, and the other person may probably say, what was it? I forgot. Okay, again you remind. So this is actual intelligence. When you remind a person the second time, then you reinforce it, then you will not forget. Then you make a note. Like that. So Krishna is saying in the middle of Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence, and then again in the end is reconfirming what is real religion. So if one knows the real religious principles as given by God Himself and sticks to it, then one is on the right track. One will achieve all perfection. But even this verse is manipulated, distorted, misinterpreted by so-called scholars. Prabhupada used to quote the name of one politician who distorted the meaning of this verse. So when he told the meaning of this verse, he said, Manmana, Lord says, think of me. So he said, you don't have to think of the person Krishna standing in the battlefield. He said, you have to think of something that is, you know, unborn, that is within Krishna. Like that he interpreted. So Prabhupada asked, where is he saying, where is Krishna saying this? What is that is unborn within Krishna? In fact, Prabhupada quotes in the purport, if you see, quotes from the scriptures, Deha Dehi Vibhedhoyam Neshware Vidyate Kvachit. There is a difference between from the Kurma Purana, Prabhupada is quoting. There is no difference between Krishna and his body. Whereas in our case, there is a difference between we and our body. Whereas Krishna and his body are one whole substance. It's a Sachidananda Vigraha. The Pejavar Mat Swami was giving an example. Somebody was asking, how is it exactly, how Krishna is inside and outside are same? That Krishna is not different from his body. Is he not like a soul which is placed inside the body like you and me? Then he said, it's like a sugar cat, he said. He said, if you take a sugar cat, he said, any cross-section you take, it will be full of sugar only. Like it's made of, he said, pitti sakar, I think, isn't it? Pitti, they call it? Yeah. It's like if a cat is made of that, imagine. Any section you take, it will be sugar. So Krishna's, any portion of Krishna's body is Satchidananda, he said. So this is a simple example. So Krishna's whole body is made up of Satchidananda. Unlike our body. We are different from our body. So there are mundane wranglers who have given misinterpretation to this verse. But the acharyas in the line of Vaishnavas, they have given understanding of what is this manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Well, nobody can become a bhakta of some impersonal light in the sky. Have you ever heard of anybody becoming a devotee of some impersonal light? Is there any meaning to loving a light? I always used to be surprised about this whenever I used to meditate in those days on light. How can I develop love for light? Bowing down to light, worshipping light. That is why when we talk of God, God is not some impersonal void, or God is not some light. God is a person. How should we think of him? Krishna explains in the previous chapter we studied.
Kavim Puranam Manushasitaram Anoraniyam Samanusmaredya Sarvasya Dhataram Achintarupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastat.
He says, one should meditate on me in the following way. So Lord is teaching us, how does he want us to meditate on him? So we cannot concoct our own way of meditating on him. Somebody says, I think God is light. Or I think God is some shunya void. I think God is this, God is that. No. Krishna is saying, this is the way one should meditate on me. In fact, in the subsequent verse, he says, if one meditates on me like this, and then he says,
Prayana kale manasa chalena bhaktya yukto yoga balena chaiva
bhaktya yukto with bhakti.
Bhruvor madhye pranam adesha samyak satam param purusham upaiti divyam.
Two words are important in this verse. One is bhaktya yukto, he says, with bhakti one should meditate on me. This is for not a bhakta, this is for a yogi, he is saying. If it is for a yogi, what to speak of a bhakta? Even for yogi, he says, you should do with bhakti. And purusham upaiti divyam, he says. Purusham means God is a person. God is not some light. The word purusham means. So, Prabhupada used to quote many verses from Upanishads because the jnanis have more faith in the Upanishads than the Puranas. So, Prabhupada quotes,
Vedagametam purusham mahantam aditya varanam tamasaparastat tammeva vidvan atimrityumetinan japanta vidyate ayanaya.
That also says, Vedagametam purusham mahanta. So Krishna is actually a Purusha. He is a person. He is a Uttama Purusha. The 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called as Purushottama Yoga. So there the Purushottama is explained in more detail. Who he is and everything. So in this he says, Kavim, Lord is all knowing. How should we come in front of God? When you come in front of Krishna with folded palms, when we look at him, we should think that here is a person who knows my in and out. He knows, he is actually all pervading the form of energy. A small amsha of him pervades the whole universe. Ekam shena stito jagat. He is everywhere and in everything. Nobody and nothing in this creation can miss out by Krishna. As a common man can miss out things. Nothing can escape Krishna's notice. So Kavi means actually he is an aware of everything. Like even Brahma is called as the Adi Kavi, isn't it? Although the word Kavi is often used for a knower, Krishna is the unique and outstanding Kavi amongst all the Kavis. Because there are so many Kavis in this world, even the modern Kavi, Stephen Kavi, can also commit mistake, isn't it? Or the Kaviyopyatra Mohitaha, he says in Bhagavad Gita. Even the Kavi, there are many Kavis, even they can be Mohita. They can be put into delusion. But Lord is the only person who is beyond delusion. As he says that I stand apart from all this world, I stand aloof. So even Brahma is the Adi Kavi, even he is put into delusion. But Krishna is all-knowing. So that is the way one should worship me, he says, to be all-knowing. So imagine yourself standing in front of a person who knows in and out of you. How will you respect that person? You will naturally have fear. You will naturally be very careful in the way you behave with him. And then he says, Puranam, he is the oldest. There is nobody older than him. He is the oldest. There is no one superior than him. And then he says, Kavim Puranam, Anushasitaram. He is the supreme controller. And then he says, Anoraniyamsam. He is such a controller that the Jivatma is so tiny, is 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. But even inside the Jivatma, he is entering into the heart of that soul and controlling him. That is his power. He is that type of controller. Although Jivatma is called as the tiniest, Lord is tinier than the tiniest. Somebody may think, oh, Lord is so great, maybe he may miss out some tiny things. No, I am smaller than the smallest, he says. And I am bigger than the biggest. Nothing can escape my notice. Anusmaredya. In this way one should meditate on him. And then Sarvasya Dhataram. And he is the holder or sustainer of everything. Anybody with little common sense can wonder how all these magnificent, the huge planets are floating. So Lord explains, it is me who is making all these things float, and by my Shakti I am maintaining them in their own places, and also I am maintaining all the living entities and nook and corner of this creation. Sarvasya Dhataram. Achintya Rupam. Achintya means inconceivable. So Lord is beyond our logic, our argument, our power to reason, and our power to capture things by our research. That is the meaning of inconceivable. So there are certain things which we can reach with our mental speculation, but God is beyond all philosophical speculation. That's the meaning of God. By our endeavor and education, we can come to a point of understanding how great he is. To some extent, by our ability, we can understand. So, Lord wants to be worshipped in that way. In fact, in the 15th chapter, Krishna uses the word Akrita Atmanaha. Uses the word. Which means, he tells Arjuna, Arjuna, not everyone can understand me. He says, the living entities are generally called as Mudha. Or dull-headed. Or they are blind to see such subtle realities. They don't have the ability to perceive subtle realities. The reason he says is they are by nature sinful. They have committed so many sins that they become more and more gross in their perception. I am very extremely subtle. Mamavyayam anuttamam. I am extremely subtle. In 7.24 he says, I am very fine. And no one can understand that fine Lord. And then Arjuna would have got a question, if such people are called as Akrita Atmana, means one who has not done enough Sukriti to, you know, be able to perceive the Lord, then how can they understand? Then Krishna says, he gives some simple examples, how a common man can understand him, how a common man can perceive him. So we all repeat this verse together, some of the very nice verses. All of you repeat after me. Gama Vishacha Bhutani धारयाम यहमो जसा पुष्णामि चौषधि सर्वा सोमो भूत्वा रसात्मकः. What is one verse before this? Anybody knows? This is second verse in the series. One verse before this. So he is talking about microcosm and macrocosm. Both he is talking about that. At a macro level, at a micro level. Two verses he talks on macro level. The one which I said is 15th chapter? I think it must be 12th or 13th. Here it is.
Yat adityagatam tejo jagat bhasayate khilam yat chandramasi yat chagnam tat tejo vidyamamakam.
So here he is saying the splendor of the sun, the light of the sun which dissipates the darkness of this world, that comes from me. The splendor of the moon also comes from me. So he's giving such very basic things for a common man to understand. When you see the rising of the sun in the morning or the setting of the sun in the ocean, you see such a huge thing with so much of power and energy. So how somebody has put it in motion, such a fiery ball. So one should think with little intelligence. So Lord says the splendor of the sun, splendor of the moon, it is me. And that is at a very big level. Is there anything that I can reach that and I can perceive easily? No, I cannot capture the sun. So Lord says very simple. Pushnami cha aushadi sarva soma bhutvara satmaka. He says, if you take the fruits and vegetables, I enter into them. He says, I become the moon, he says. Bhutva means I become the moon. And I enter into the all the vegetables and fruits as juices. Six types of tastes. And when you taste them, you can understand that these tastes have actually come because of Krishna entering them. Different types of tastes. Like I always used to wonder this pomegranate, you know, when you break it, it's like, you know, pearls in your hand. Looks like a pearl, so beautiful and so delicious. And every fruit has its own taste. And every one of us have a different liking for different fruits. So where are these juices coming from? He says, by my Shakti, by the moonlight, I enter into these plants and I give the juices in them. So Krishna wants us to understand that it is He, how He is performing these miraculous acts, which are impossible for a common man. And then He says something which is even more directly perceivable by us in our own bodies.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Dehamashritaha Pranapana samayuktaha Pachamyannam chaturvidham.
You see the greatness of Krishna, that He is the one who makes the plants grow and make them yield crops, make them yield paddy or wheat or anything like that. And after we consume it, He is the one who helps to digest that food also. So we need Him in both the times. In order to, when you put a seed, how does the seed grow into your plant or a tree? That's where Krishna's potency. And then after we eat them, it is Krishna who makes them digest. Imagine if there is no jatragni in the stomach, there is no digestive fire in the stomach, what will happen to us? In fact, it's called as Manipuraka, they call it. The yogis call it as Manipuraka. There is a super soul situated in that Manipuraka also, in the nabi also. So those yogis who focus their attention on Manipuraka, super soul, are considered to be a lesser yogi. Lesser yogis in comparison to those who focus on the super soul in the heart. But that is also one type of meditation. Some yogis meditate on the Manipuraka chakra, trying to perceive the super soul present there. So Lord is present as super soul there, and He is the one who makes the food get digested. In this way, he tells, in the next verse also, he says, it's me who gives the remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness, and I am the one who knows the Vedas, I am the writer of the Vedanta. So, all these things can lead one to understand the greatness of Krishna. So, first one should understand how great is the Lord, how mighty is the Lord, how powerful He is, how He is omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient, how He is all-knowing, all-powerful, and omnipotent and always is present in all the places. So this is the first step in understanding God. And when one gets this understanding of God and respects Him, and bows down to him and salutes him, then one can come closer. When Krishna says here, Manmana, think of me, this Manmana is also elaborated by Krishna later in the 10th chapter. He's explaining how he wants to be taught. It is not only out of respect, only the yogis consider Krishna in that respectful mood. They understand Krishna's might, how mighty he is and how great he is, and they respect him. But the Lord says in the 10th chapter, the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, very famous. There the Lord is saying, the thoughts of my devotees always dwell in me. Matchitta madgata prana. See the word madgata prana. Their lives are fully devoted to me. Their prana means their very life. What is this madgata prana? This means the minds of the devotees are devoted to Krishna. It's very difficult for us to devote our mind to somebody, but giving our limbs of the body is very easy. With our hands or legs, to take something, you know, like this and give it to a person is very easy. But giving it with love is very difficult. Like say some guest comes to your house. Of course you don't treat all guests alike, isn't it? You know, some are wanted and some are unwanted. Some are prohibited. Isn't it? But you may treat different people differently. So, but in all cases probably you may not show that on your face. Probably you may just, you know, whatever is given you will give. So, using our limbs of our body is very, very easy. But to use our mind to offer our love is not an easy joke. It's a very difficult thing. So there he explains, madgata prana. For anybody in this world, life is the most cherished thing. Every one of us, we can ask ourselves how much we cherish our life. Nobody would want to give up their life. Everyone is attached to their body. When Dadichi Rishi was asked by the demigods to give up his life for a noble cause, that time Dadichi first, actually he wanted to hear some good words from demigods. Actually he knew, Dadichi Rishi knew very well that all the devatas, they are attached to sense gratification. So initially he deliberately teased them, saying that even if Vishnu asks somebody for life, do you think anybody will be ready to give life? For the life is so dear to everyone. How can you ask me for my life? I am also attached to my life. I don't want to give my body. Then the demigods started preaching to him. They started saying, Oh great Rishi, don't you know? In this world, those people who live selflessly, simply for the sake of others, they are the most glorious. And their lives become remembered by everyone who, for all time to come. And in this world, we should always live for the benefit of others, not for one's own benefit. And they started preaching. And Dadichi Rishi was hearing very happily. Very nice. He was speaking very nice. And then he said, I just teased you. I was ready to give this body. And then he himself says, what is the use of this body? He says, this body is simply perishable. Aho kashtam, aho dainyam, parakkai, kshanabangurai, yannopakuryat, aswarthai. So he says, aho kashtam, aho dainyam, this body is so lowly, it is simply made up of flesh and bones. At the time of death, it will be eaten by worms or burnt by fire or totally neglected by everyone in this world. Who is going to look at this body after one dies? So he says, when one is alive, this body should be used for the service of others. It should not be selfishly utilized. So here, when we talk of manmana, it's not only giving our body, but giving our mind also. Madgata prana means giving one's whole existence to Krishna. That means, the example that Rupa Goswami gives is so fitting here. The attraction of a boy and a girl. So Prabhupada used to quote this very often, that when a boy and a girl are present, they are very fond of one another. There is a very great attraction, a mad kind of attraction between one another. And you can see how their minds are infatuated thinking about one another, even in their absence. Even in each other's absence, once a boy falls in love with a girl, and girl falls in love with a boy, even in the absence, the total mind becomes preoccupied with each other's thought. They think about everything practically. Think about how the other person speaks, how the person is smiling, how the other person is having dealings, and what the other person likes. And in anything that they do, They always try to act in such a way that the other person will be pleased. So this example is very fitting. So this is the way devotees also live. Prabhupada says Srimad Bhagavatam is Vaishnavanam Priyam, it is said. It's very, very lovable to the hearts of Vaishnavas. Why? Because Srimad Bhagavatam talks about the sweet, loving relationship between Lord and His devotees. There are many, many pastimes which talk about how the Lord loves His devotees and how the devotees love the Lord, how the devotees sacrifice everything for the Lord's pleasure, and how the Lord feels restless without His devotees' company. So you go through Bhagavatam, you will find so many pastimes. So that is the reason why the devotees are very fond of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada says, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, these are called as material activities, economic development, sense gratification and desire for liberation. These are also practiced by people in the field of religion. But a devotee has nothing to give and take with any of this. He doesn't do any materialistic yajna for elevation to heaven. Or he is not attracted to economic development. He is not attracted to anything of this world. The sense gratification. So his only pinpointed goal is how to please the senses of Krishna. When we talk about pleasing Krishna, sometimes people get confused. What is this pleasing the senses of Krishna? It is not a very difficult thing for us to understand pleasing another person in this world. Every one of you working here, you must be pleasing your boss in the company. Isn't it? Is it not true that we all, while working in a company, we try to please our boss? Otherwise, you won't get a recommendation for promotion. Isn't it? After some years of work, if you want promotion and you want a better salary, naturally you try to please somebody in the company. In fact, I try to understand the mood of the boss. So today he is angry, I have to be careful. Or today he is happy, maybe I can go and show him the work. Or probably if I do this extra additional thing, then he will be more pleased. So we think all these things. So pleasing another person is not a new thing for us. And we can apply the same thing, Prabhupada explains, how we can apply the same tendency when we are serving Krishna. We have to just understand what Krishna wants us to do. And you have to behave accordingly. So Krishna says, how my devotees behave? Mat chitta, mat gata prana. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. They think of Krishna's form. So this is the most confidential instruction in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. So the devotees think of me in this particular form of Krishna. So the devotees always call Krishna as, oh, lotus-eyed one. You have seen that in all the prayers. Rukmini is writing a letter to Krishna. She is writing, Yatpada pankaja, no. Yashangri pankaja rajas tapanam mahanto panchanti umapadrivatma tamopahatyai. Yarhyam bujaksha nalabheya bhavat prasad. She is calling as Yarhyam bujaksha, ambujaksha, oh lotus-eyed one. So this is how devotees call him. That means devotees think of Krishna in his beautiful form of Shyamsundar with his lotus eye, with his beautiful peacock feather on his head, with beautiful pitambar, wearing pitambar and wearing beautiful ornaments and flower garland, Vaijayanti mala with his Kastubha jewel, with lips like bimba fruit, playing on his flute. Most beautiful form of Krishna, the color of a fresh monsoon cloud, Shyam Varna. So this is the form which a devotee is supposed to remember. That's why this is the most confidential instruction. Manmana means Krishna wants us to think of him in this way. And not just think of him, but think of him in love. That becomes more difficult, isn't it? Just thinking of a person, like if I show you somebody's photograph, think of him. And you don't know anything about that person. Okay, it's not very difficult to, remember his image. You see him once and I ask you, can you think of him? And it may be possible for you. Imagine that you have no relation with that person. He is somebody from some other part of the world. I show you a photograph, you think of him. Is it possible? Maybe thinking is possible, but you can't think of him with love. You will ask me, why should I love this person? Maybe you are just showing some photo of somebody. How can I love this person? But the beauty with Krishna is, this is our most fundamental million-dollar question that was asked by Parikshit to Sukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. He raised such a brilliant question which the Vaishnavas talk over and over again and relish the question of Parikshit and the answer of Sukadeva Maharaj. Shukadeva Goswami. He asked the question, when Brahma stole all the cows and calves, when Krishna was left alone, when he returned back home, then Krishna saw that all my cowherd boys have been stolen, calves have been stolen. So what did Krishna do? He expanded himself into various forms. He expanded himself into calves and cowherd boys. But who were they? They were all Krishna only. But the beauty of Krishna is that he expanded in such a perfect way. If a cowherd boy was a little stout, so Krishna also had a stout body. If somebody had a prominent nose, then he also had a prominent nose. Somebody was thin, so he was also thin. He was exactly, precisely, the bodies were made exactly to look like the children of the cowherd men. It looked exactly like that. And the calves also were exactly the same. There was no difference whatsoever. That is the meaning of Krishna being God. He could expand himself in such a wonderful way. And then they all returned back. At that time, the cows, the mother cows, they were all in the Govardhan hill, hiding the grass. In those days, even now also you will see the mother cows and the children cows, calves, whatever. So they both will be separated when they are grazing in the green field. So there were mother cows in the top of the Govardhan, and underneath, below the Govardhan, there were calves. But those calves were actually bigger calves. The bigger calves were actually heading down. Now when Krishna returned back, and all the calves returned back, the mother cows saw from the top of the Govardhan at these calves. These calves are actually grown up already. They don't need milk from the mother. But the mother started coming very fast, running towards the calves. And when they were coming running, there was so much thorny bushes on the way. So they had to put their feet on the thorny bushes and it was tearing their body. And they didn't care. They went running, dashing towards their calves and started feeding milk to them and licking their bodies. And the cowherd men from the top of the mountain, Govardhan, they became very angry that their mothers are going to feed the calves all the milk and we will not get any milk. So they took sticks and they were running behind the cows. Very fast they came running down. And as soon as they came down the mountain and they saw their children, cowherd boys, at once they completely forgot all their anger. At once a sort of deep affection they started feeling towards their children. The children were not too small. The children were actually quite grown up. But still they started catching them and putting them on their lap, smelling their heads and embracing them. So the other people are wondering, what happened? Everyone is... Balram came out. That was Balram's birthday. So he didn't go to the forest that day. Mother told him that you stay back and you give charity to the Brahmins. And Balram saw all the fathers embracing their grown-up children. He was wondering, what happened? Why they are showing so much love today, which they generally would not show on a normal day. And then Balram understood there is something going on, some trick. Balram understood. So now Parikshit asked this question to Shukadeva Maharaj, that how could the cowherd men and the cows love Krishna, the expansion of Krishna, more than their own children? It doesn't seem to be logical. You see, there are millions of children running here and there, but the parent is attracted only to their own child. You seen that? Why? Like, how much do you all love your own child and your neighbor's child? Is there a difference or is it the same? It's like difference between earth and sky, isn't it? Like how parents are attached to their own child. Even if the neighborhood child is the same size, same age, still you have attraction to your own child only, isn't it? So that's why I asked this question. How is it that they were attracted to Krishna more than their own child? You are saying that the previous days they didn't show so much love to their own child. But when Krishna came, the expansion of Krishna came, looking like their child, they showed more love. How is it possible? It appears to be contradictory. It should be the other way. They should show more love to their child. And Krishna is another family child. Krishna is the child of Nanda and Yashoda. This time, Shukadeva Maharaj was very pleased with this question. He said, Krishna is Atmatmana. Krishna is residing in the heart of every soul as super soul. He is in the heart of everyone. So, Krishna is the most loved by every living being than even their own kith and kin, their own near and dear ones. Krishna is the most loved than one's mother, father, relatives, friends, bandhu, everyone else, they all come next. What every one of us love the most is Krishna. Somebody may be American, but whom does he love the most? Krishna, because Krishna is sitting in his heart. Somebody may be, you know, from Russia. Somebody may be from Congo forest. That doesn't mean, even if he doesn't know Krishna also, whom does he love the most? Krishna. Because Krishna is residing in the heart of everyone. And everyone already has a love. But that love is covered over. It is not yet manifested, it is not yet seen. So if there is a process which you practice, like chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, by doing which gradually when that covering is removed, then one's spontaneous loving, mad attraction for Krishna will come out. Then one can see that, yes, this is the person I was looking for. In so many lifetimes, so many millions of years I have spent in this world, this is my friend I was looking for. Like that one can realize. So, in this way, when Krishna says, Machitta, Madgata Prana, the thoughts of a pure devotee dwell in me. The pure devotee can be from anywhere, he can belong to any country, any state, any land, he can be any age. Because every soul has a spontaneous love for Krishna. That is already there in the soul. That's why Madgata Prana, he says. Krishna is our prana actually. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhana Prana, we say. He is our life. He is our very life and he is our very soul. So in this way, when we talk of Manmana, Krishna wants us to remember him in that form. Again, coming back to the old question. I asked all of you, if I show a photograph of a person, for example, if you show, say, Tendulkar, you show Tendulkar now, and ask, how many of you have fallen in love with him? Maybe some Indian youths may say, but I don't feel any love. Because, you know, his beating the bat doesn't please me in any way. That appears just when some ball comes to him and he just hits it. You know. It doesn't show any special love for us. Because we have no connection with that personality. Or similarly, a hero or a heroine, many people have fans. Everyone in this world may have attraction for some hero or heroine. You know, we used to conduct classes. In one of our classes, we used to show pictures. You know, amongst the tribals also, there is Miss Tribal, you know. Yeah. If you see them, you will run away. Because their teeth is so big, and they, you know, their hairs are standing like this, you know. You know, their nose is like an eagle's nose, you know. Like that, you know. And they are a Miss Tribal, you know. If you see, amongst the thousands of tribals, she is the most beautiful. If anybody sees, they cannot believe. Beauty is a far-fetched idea. First of all, is it a human being, you will doubt. Like that. But amongst them, they are considered the most beautiful. Like a crow considers the offspring of a crow to be the most beautiful creation in the whole world. Like that. We think like that. So in the same way, every personality may attract a few people. But Krishna, if I show a photo of Krishna, somebody says, I don't have love for this person, he can say if he wants. But actually, when one's coverings are removed, and Krishna is the person whom everyone loves. So when some American devotees have come to India, they went to one of our college programs. So one boy was very surprised and they asked this American, say, I am born in India, I don't feel so much love for Krishna. How do you feel? How you have developed so much love that you have given up everything and you are just, you know, singing Krishna all the time and preaching about Krishna. So the American person was telling me that, you know, neither are you an Indian nor am I American, he said. Because we all are Jivara Sarupahoy, Krishna and Tadas, he said. So everyone has a relation. Machitta, Madgata Prana, Bodhayanta Parasparam. So the pure devotees, they derive great joy in conversing the pastimes of Krishna amongst one another, amongst themselves. They derive great joy. So in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, one renders services to Krishna out of some attraction for him. You know, there is only one qualification required for one to begin devotional service. Anybody knows what is that qualification? Yeah? Yes? Yeah? Faith? Okay, faith. Anything else? Yeah? Sincerity, yeah? Desire? Surrender. I am looking for one more word. Yeah? Yeah. She is saying prem, yeah? Serving Vaishnava, she is saying, yeah. Still, I am looking for one more word. Although many of these words are close to what I am looking for. Association with Vaishnavas. Intense? This is here. Causes. All of them are in the fringe. What I am saying, what I am going to say is in the center. What is the only one qualification required for one to come to Krishna consciousness? Yeah? Yes? Attraction. That's all. Attraction for Krishna. That's the only thing you need. You don't need any qualification. Do you need knowledge? No. Because knowledge means to discriminate between what is Sat and what is Asat, what is matter, what is spirit. That analysis of Sat and Asat does not lead to remembrance of Krishna. So you don't need knowledge. Do we need renunciation, vairagya? No. When you have to do vairagya, your mind is always focusing on those objects which you have to give up. So your mind is not focused on Krishna. So you don't need vairagya. But do you need attraction? Yes, you need. Some attraction should be there for Krishna. So Prabhupada says, when one comes in front of the deities of the Lord, when one hears Krishna's names, one should have some attraction. That is called as Adav Shraddha. Somebody said Shraddha. It's a right word also. Shraddha has many meanings. Shraddha means faith. Shraddha means interest. Shraddha means attraction. All these meanings are for Shraddha. So that initial attraction is required. Then that seed can develop. And how does this Shraddha come? The 11th canto of Bhagavatam, there's a verse which says, Yadirchaya mat katadav jata shraddhastu yapuman. It says somehow or other, Yadirchaya means, you know, we don't know how. Somehow or other, Yadirchaya mat katadav. Krishna himself is saying this to Uddhava. He's saying, my dear Uddhava, Yadirchaya mat katadav, when somebody is hearing my katha, jata shraddhastu yapuman, all of a sudden they develop a kind of fascination for me, love for me, and they want to know more about me. Then they come in the association again and again. So this Yadrichya is one word that has been taken by the acharyas and very deeply analyzed. What is this word, somehow or other? Is it a chance theory? It is not another chance theory. This Yadrichya, somehow or other, which means it's not a punya karma that can bring us to bhakti. Because punya karma will only give good fruits. You cannot come to bhakti by that. It is some mercy of the devotee in the past lives. By some association of a devotee, we must have had some connection to Krishna in the past life, which is now again evoked in this lifetime. Then we can again remember Krishna. That Shraddha is there. So every one of us, we will see, forget about the deep philosophical discussions we have. Some people criticize us that these people are very philosophical. Some people criticize these people are sentimental. So people criticize in various ways. Forget about all that. We all can sit alone in a room, close the door, sit alone and close our eyes and introspect and ask, how much attachment I have for Krishna? How much attraction I have for Him? So, objectively you can analyze yourself. When you hear the verses like Chatushloki, Matchitta, Madgata Prana, Bodhayanta Parasparam, Katayantascha Maam Nityam Tushyanticha, Ramanticha. Tesham evanu kampartam ahamajnana jantama. I enter into the heart of my devotee. Even if my devotee is a fool. See, the acharyas are very great souls. The acharyas have given such purports to the bhakti siddhanta, the siddhanta of bhakti. Even if a devotee is not intelligent enough to understand those purports, Prabhupada writes that. Even if a devotee does not hear his spiritual master's katha which he gives and does not understand the glories of the Lord, but if a devotee is sincerely rendering devotional service, he may be looked upon as a fool by the common people. He may be apparently looking like a fool. But if a devotee is sincerely executing devotional service, Lord says, I enter into his heart and what do I do in his heart? Nashyami Atma Bhavastu. I remove the darkness from his heart and I reveal myself to him. And he develops a deep attachment for me. When I reside in my heart. That's why you see sometimes even illiterate devotees are more bhakti than very learned scholarly devotees. You can see that. Even illiterate devotees, they have no education, nor can they understand lofty lectures. They may not understand the fine aspects of Krishna conscious philosophy. But they have a mad attraction for the Lord, attachment. Because Lord gives that attachment. When he sees that a devotee is sincerely entering devotional service, Lord says, I give this attraction for them. So in this way, sincerely rendering devotional service is most essential in the early stages, with little attraction for the Lord. Let people call it sentimental, like somebody is serving the deity. Like in summer season, we serve the deity with cold water. In winter season we heat the water and serve. That is like that. So the acharyas are the ones who are so intelligent that they want us to have a proper bhav when we are serving the deity. So Krishna is going to drink water. Now it is winter, it is so cold. Let me give him lukewarm water. When you are serving sweet rice, cool it down and then you serve him like that. So acharyas have made us serve like this, although we don't have the complete faith that I am actually serving the Lord and Lord is actually taking these things. We just follow in their footsteps and gradually we will develop that kind of attraction. So in the early stage, devotional service, rendering service is stressed, but the very same service transforms into spontaneous love as we progress more and more, higher and higher in devotional service. But a very advanced devotees have the spontaneous love already in their hearts, like the gopis of Vrindavan. The gopis of Vrindavan, even when they were five years of age, they always were meditating on Krishna. The gopis are the best example of how one should think of Krishna. I was telling about different kinds of religious principles. Although religion originally sprouts from God, Sarvam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, God has given different types of religion. But God becomes the most pleased when one loves Him in the manner in which the gopis have loved Krishna. Then the Lord will appreciate the most. Because, just like you take the Prime Minister of India, for example, somebody says, I am serving the Prime Minister of India by being a citizen, always taking commodities from him. Whatever he gives, I use and I enjoy life in this way. I am a law-abiding citizen. Yes, he is also accepted as a citizen. Somebody says, I work for him, I work for the government by being a police constable. So he is also a person working for the government. Somebody says, I have worked so hard that I have become an MLA of this town or MP of this particular place. Then he even gets to see his face in the parliament when he goes, isn't it? But even his connection is not a very strong connection. But if somebody becomes a relative of the Prime Minister, like somebody becomes an uncle or aunt or a distant relative, that is even great. If somebody is a confidential relative of the President, like President's wife or President's children, President's mother and father, they know him the best. They know him as an individual person, what he likes, what he doesn't like, what is his mood, what are his interests. They know in and out of this person. And this person also has a love for them. In the same way with Krishna also, some people know, what is God? God is impersonal light. It's a Brahman. We just sit in meditation on, meditating on the Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi. I am myself the Brahman. So, Prabhupada explains, these jnanis, what is their level? Just like you take a bottle of water from an ocean, and you bring the sample to your house, and you may say that, I'll analyze this bottle and find out what the ocean is. Because the chemical constitution is same. Similarly, the soul is like one tiny part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So by understanding how this is Brahman, we can understand the greatness of that Brahman, Parabrahman. So their analysis actually can at best be one of quality. They can understand that how God is supremely pure and great. They don't go beyond that. They only know the Sat feature. But when one knows Paramatma, it is little more better. Like Purusham Upaiti Divyam, Krishna says. So they know the personality of Godhead. But even then, what is the understanding of a Paramatma Vadi? It is very, the relationship is one of awe and reverence. Awe and reverence. There is a kind of fear for the Lord and the greatness. One acharya has given explanation to this Manmana, Mame Vaishyasi. You know what he says? My dear Arjun, if you worship me in this way with deep love for me, you will return back to me. You will not return back to the thousand-headed Vishnu. Sahasa Shirsha Purusha. Not that Purusha. And you will not return to the thumb-sized Paramatma. And you will not return to Brahman. But you will return back to the Shyam Sundar, Krishna. So Lord is keeping His own hand on His chest and saying, you will return back to me. Mame Vaishyasi. That means I am the same person who is in the spiritual world and I have come here. And you will return back to me. Lord says. This is the right explanation. Acharyas are given. So in this way, the gopis had actually a spontaneous love for the Shyam Sundar Krishna. They always prayed that let Krishna become their husband. In fact, any austerity they did for Krishna. Like when they were desirous of achieving Krishna as their husband, immediately Vrindadevi she assumed the form of a yogini, and she came in front of them and she blessed all the gopis and told them how to approach Krishna, how to achieve him. She told them that all of you perform this Katyayani vrat, and they agreed to worship Katyayani only because Katyayani can bless them to get Krishna as their husband. And she told them to perform the austerity of eating only Havishanna during that entire period of... What was that month? Anybody knows that month? Which was that month? How many days they performed penance? 30 days? Yeah. Imagine eating only Havishanna with no taste, very like bland diet, very thing. And they were taking cold water bath in the chill waters. And they would come every day, they would take bath and they would worship Katyayani. And they would eat very simple food. And they would all be catching each other's hand and they would be singing glories of Krishna. The very meaning of the word gopi, gopi comes from the word gupta. So they kept Krishna in their hearts very secretly and they would not reveal to anybody. So every gopi wanted to achieve Krishna, and when they came to the banks of Yamuna, they found that many other gopis have come. Then they all revealed their hearts to one another and they wept tears. Whether will they be able to achieve the ultimate goal of getting Krishna as their husband. So in this way they performed the severe penances. At last, actually Krishna was 6 years old at the time. He came with three of his friends, Sridhama, Sridham, Vasudham and Kinkini, three of his friends. He brought them also with him. And Krishna, you know, Krishna steals their clothes and later on he gives it back to them. Acharya has given explanation to this pastime. It is Krishna accepting their hearts and giving it back to them. As he says in this verse, in one of the verses the Lord says that the devotees are in my heart and I am in their heart. Devotees do not think anything but me, and I do not think of anything other than my devotees, he says. In this way, the gopis achieve Krishna as their ultimate pati. I was referring to a verse in this third chapter, I think 10th or 11th verse, Prabhupada quotes several patis. I think it is 3.10. See, there is a verse from Bhagavatam. Shriyapatir, Yajnapatir, Prajapatir, Dhyampatir, Lokapatir, Dharapatihi, Patir Gatis, Chandak Vrishni Satpatam, Prasidatam me Bhagavan Satam Patihi. So he says that there are many pati is mentioned here, but the ultimate pati, the Satvatam pati, who is it? Krishna. Krishna is actually the pati of everyone in the creation. So, if you read Krishna book, there are chapter after chapter about gopis meditating on Krishna playing the flute, gopis meditating on Krishna entering the forest, gopis meditating on Krishna returning from the forest. They were constantly absorbed in his remembrance. So Prabhupada says that the only solace for devotees in the material world is to recite these prayers of gopis and great devotees like Akrura, and by reading these prayers over and over again and by remembering it, devotees can feel the presence of Krishna in their lives. So this is the way one is supposed to think of Krishna. Even Akrura also thought of the form of Krishna. He thought of the form of Balaram. He thought about how he is going to enter Vrindavan. So he was constantly meditating like that. So, you see the Bhagavatam, everywhere you find people, great devotees, remembering Krishna's form. Kunti thought of Krishna's form, and she glorifies Krishna's form. Namah Pankajanabhaya, Namah Pankajamalini, Namah Pankajanetraya, Namaste Pankajangraye. She is glorifying the personality of Krishna. She is not talking of some impersonal light. Later on, even in Krishna's absence, Kunti was thinking of Krishna's form, remembering Krishna's form. So for a devotee, the personality of Krishna is very, very important to meditate upon. In our impure state, we cannot have love for Krishna. It's likely that we may have even envy for Krishna when we see Krishna's form in our impure state. But as we progress, all that impurity will gradually go away. Like Shishupal thought of Krishna in envy, Kamsa thought of Krishna in fear. But these are all not appreciated by the acharyas. It's unfavorable devotional service. But favorable devotional service is like the gopis of Vrindavan, or Yashodamai, or like Nanda Maharaj, how they were thinking of Krishna. So that is actually the Vraja Bhakti. That is why the word Mamekam Sharanam Braja is mentioned. Actually, there are so many equivalent words for Braja which Krishna could have used. But Acharya says that he used the word Braja because he wants to surrender in the mood of Braja. That's why he says, Sarvadharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja, he says. Do surrender. Like that. So, other things that Krishna says, like Mad Bhaktaha, become a devotee, Mad Yaji, worship me, Mam Namaskuru. Every one of this is vividly explained in the Shastras. Every one of these things. I was focusing on the Manmana, thinking of Krishna with the mind and our heart and our soul. But every one of these activities is extremely potent in helping us to develop our attraction for Krishna. This word Namanta, or Nama, what is that verse which uses this word Namanta? Namanta Eva. No, this word is Jnane Prayasam Udapasya. Throw far away your tendency to speculate about the absolute truth. Jnane Prayasam Udapasya. Namanta Eva. Bow down to the Lord. Jeevanti Sant Mukharitam Bhavadiya Vartam. Hear from the devotees of the Lord about the glories of Krishna and his pastimes. From great sons. And what do you do with that? Sthane Stita Shutigatam Tanuvan Manobir. In whatever situation you may be, with your body, mind and words, you serve that Lord. Chitigatam, hear his glories and you serve him. And he says, Ye Prayasho Ajita Jitopyasi Taistri Lokyam. Lord is called as Ajita, unconquerable. He becomes conquered by love, he says. So the word Namanta is there actually, bowing down. So this bowing down is leaving one's false ego and offering one's head to Krishna. Especially in a country like America, for people to bow down is a very big thing. In India, people bow down very easily. Come to temple and they know, everyone is bowing, so I also bow. They don't feel any reservation. But in America, bowing down is it's a sign of like humiliation. Like one person asked Prabhupada, you know, why should we bow down? I don't feel like bowing down to you. Prabhupada said, first you bow down, then you will feel. He said. Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down to you, he says. Because when I bow down, I do it mechanically, I don't have any feelings. Like there was one old man in Bombay. So he used to come to temple for about 2-3 years, but he hadn't begun chanting. So I was trying to preach to him. I said, you're coming so regularly and you're actively participating in seva and all, but why didn't you chant? He said, no, what is the use of chanting without bhav? You know, I am going to chant only, you know, when I'm feeling a natural loving attraction for Krishna. That time I'll take my beads and say, Hare Krishna, you know. I'll chant with full bhav and only then I'll move my beads. Till then I won't touch mala, he said. So, in our neophyte stage, if you're waiting for that, probably that stage will never come. Unless you do it. So Prabhupada says, you begin it. You know, we have to begin practicing. When you begin practicing, even in India, if you see, a husband and wife marriage, if you see, they get them married at a very young age. Like, you know, the girl is 11 years and the boy is like 14 years or 15 years. They get them married. And afterwards, in 17 or 18, when they again come together, you know, and they're living together, but the wife, by faithfully serving the husband, she develops love for him, an affection for him. And he also feels great gratitude, and in this way, they develop more and more attraction for one another, affection for one another. In the same way, chanting the Lord's name should be begun. We should do it, whether we chant mechanically or we... Because we don't have love at all in the beginning stage. Love is totally hidden. It may be apparently mechanical. We do it. And as we go on doing it by regular practice, that is why it is said, Shaddha Shabda Vishwasa Kohe Sudhrida Nishtai. No, Nitya Siddha Krishna Pema Sadhya Kabunai Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Karaya Udai. We have to keep on hearing about Krishna. Hear his pastimes, hear his glories, hear about the description of how he deals with his devotees. Also this Namaskuru. Yamaraj says this, those who have not even bowed down to Lord Mukunda even once. What is it? Krishnaya no namati yat chira ekadapi tanana yadvam, he said. Those who did not bow down to Lord Mukunda Krishna even once, bring those people to me, he said. That goes to show how important is bowing down to Krishna. Otherwise you have to bow down to Yamaraj. Because if you don't bow down to Krishna, Yamaraj says, I will send my men to pick you up. And they will bring them to me. And you have to come to Yamalok. He is saying like that. So, There is a story 15 years ago that it happened in Jagannath Puri. A boy from Katak, a small boy, a 10-year-old boy, he had a very great devotion for Lord Jagannath. And he said, I am going to go to Jagannath Puri by performing Dandavat Parikrama. You know Dandavat Parikrama?
Yes.
Dandavat means, you know, you bow down like this, and again you put a stone there, and then you come to that point and you again bow down like that. So in this way, from Katak to Jagannath, he wanted to go. And his mother thought, he's a small child, 10-year-old child, how is he going to do that? But the boy was very fixed up, he's determined. And the mother said, okay, allow me to travel with you. So I'll cook for you and I'll be with you. Mother also traveled with the boy. And the day of Rath Yatra came, there was only one day left. And this boy was several kilometers away in the frontiers. It would surely take him two and a half days more in order to come to the Rath Yatra. The mother said, better that you give up the parikrama now, let us rush to the Rath Yatra and let us go and take darshan of the Lord. But he said, no, I have promised to Jagannath, I have taken a vow, I have to perform Dandavat Parikrama. And in this way, he went on doing Dandavat, little with his small body. You can imagine going several kilometers. And then on the day of the Rath Yatra, when lakhs of people were assembled, they were moving, Baladev, Subhadra, they were moving. But Jagannath's Rath was not moving even 1 inch. Several people came from the front, from the back, they were pushing and pulling. Even today, sometimes Jagannath, you see, they will say that he is not ready to move. You will see so many people pull, the Rath just doesn't move at all. Nobody knows the reason why. So they waited. They thought maybe in the afternoon the Lord may agree to move. They waited for the afternoon. Then the second day, 3 days Jagannath could not be moved, and every day thousands of people were trying to move the chariot. And the third day, people were wondering that Jagannath, it seems that he doesn't want to leave this place only. Baladev Subhadra had already gone ahead far away. So at that time, this great miracle happened. All the people were watching. In front of them, this small, tiny boy was doing dandavat, and coming from a distance. And all people gave way. And as soon as he came in front of the Rath, and he touched the ropes of the Rath, immediately the cart started moving. And Jagannath became very happy to move at that time. And all the people were so thrilled by seeing this. Jagannath Swami ki! They were, their hearts are melted seeing this boy's devotion in such a tender age. So Jagannath Swami performs many such pastimes. So Dandavat, which we do mechanically, but here also again, and the offering of obeisances should be performed with devotion, like this devotee performed. In this way, Krishna says, Madhyaji, Mam Namaskuru, you offer your obeisances to me. So when one offers obeisances, one can think, my dear Lord, whatever I possess, it all belongs to you. And you are a Kavi. I used to remember this verse. This verse I like the most, Kavim Purana Manushasitara. One picture I saw when I was a schoolboy, a huge form of Vishnu, you know, the Trivikrama form, Lord Vishnu. I saw it in one of the pictures also, Dashavatar. The Lord Vishnu, who comes as Vamanadev, he starts growing. He starts growing, huge up to the skies. And his feet also become very, very big. And all the people in his feet are looking very, very tiny. So I always used to consider myself like that. Whenever I would pray this, Ayi Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. We are like that. We are very, very tiny. Like a small particle. Lord is very great. He measured the whole universe, Brahmanda, with his three steps. Measured the whole creation. He is extremely great. In all respects he is great. Not only in size he is great. In all respects he is great. In size and in intelligence and might and power, in every respect he is very, very great. So when you bow down to the Lord, we have to understand, my dear Lord, I am very tiny. Because you understand what is the position. In the earth planet, you know, we are in Pune, and Pune is so small compared to Maharashtra. Maharashtra is a small place in India. And see the situation of India in the globe. It's a small, tiny patch of land. And if you take the viewpoint of the whole universe, this earth is like a small dust particle. And we are also in one point on this earth. Tiny point, and we are offering obeisances. We are very, very tiny. So a devotee should always remember his insignificant position in front of the Lord. That keeps us very humble. And we can beg the Lord to always help us remember Him. One may wonder that, you know, I am so tiny. You know, you are saying that, you know, earth is like a dust particle and there are millions of planets in one Brahmanda and there are crores of Brahmandas, Anantakoti Brahmandanai. So will Lord take my prayer seriously? I am so insignificant, probably He will miss me. No, Lord can never miss us. Bhakti is such a powerful agent that although we are so insignificant, if there is bhakti in the heart, Lord can easily see that. In fact, yatra gayanti mad bhakta tatra tishthami. Lord is present where bhakti is present. Immediately, Lord comes there at once. So in this way, Lord is giving all the most confidential instructions in this verse. Mame vaishasi yuktva eva matmanam madparayana. In the concluding shloka of this 9th chapter, the Lord is telling Arjuna this most sublime instruction of how to worship Him in bhakti. So prior to this verse, Lord also spoke about bhakti, like ananya chintayantomam patram pushpam phalamtam and all that. At last, after finishing all that, He is saying, thinking of Him. So we should not work mindlessly without remembering the Lord in the mind. That is His instruction. Somebody may say, I am working very hard for the purpose of, for the Lord. But we should not be working hard without thinking of the Lord in the mind. Thinking of the Lord in the mind is very, very important. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has given a commentary. He is saying, Krishna is telling Arjuna, my dear Arjun, don't think of me like the servant of a king. The servant of a king is thinking about, you know, about his family, his relatives, friends, his possessions, his commodities, his house, and he's also having worries in his mind. What will I do about this? What will I do about that? He has many selfish worries. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't think of me like that. How should you think of me? You should think of me in love. As a master and the ultimate goal and his ultimate friend. You think of Krishna like that. So this kind of attraction is something that will spring from the heart. As we go on sincerely entering devotional service, day after day, month after month, year after year, consistently, without giving up, without losing faith, without harboring any doubts in the mind, without getting tired in devotional service, without getting mentally tired, going on with complete faith, yes. In fact, our faith should be so deep-rooted that it should go even beyond death. Which means, even till the point of death, if you have not achieved prema, a devotee doesn't worry. Because the devotee has complete faith. The Lord has promised that He will give prema in the heart. So let me just serve Him and surrender to Him. And the time will come when we will achieve that. When the devotional kripa grows and grows and grows, the prema will come as a fruit. It will manifest in the heart. In fact, those devotees who don't worry about the future, who just are interested in serving the Lord, Lord gives them only the result. And the devotee who is demanding, you know, so many years I have done, what has God given me? So they get nothing. Their hearts run dry. So a devotee should always be in the mood of giving to the Lord and surrendering to the Lord and wanting to serve Him more and more. Just like, you know, when you are going in the car, sometimes somebody comes to clean your window shield, isn't it? You have seen sometimes? In petrol pumps or sometimes in the signals also. You know why they are doing that, you all know, isn't it? They will go in the front, they will go in the side and they will show very actively that I am doing this for you. And then they will, you know, they will batter the window. And then you open the door, what do you want? Then they'll show some, some kind of, you know, they want a coin, 1 rupee coin or 2 rupee coin, like that. But have you ever seen anybody, you know, they batter the door and ask them, what do you want? Please tell me another service. Give me one more service. Have you seen anybody like that? Asking for another service. So devotional service is like that. You do service to Krishna very actively, and when Krishna is very eager to come and give you something, Krishna says, my dear devotee, what do you want? I want to offer you something. Okay, Krishna, that service is over. Give me one more service. Neither devotee should ask. That is the meaning of devotion service. Then such devotees can achieve spontaneous love. Hare Krishna.